Basically just want to go over a few things about the program, the classes here at EPIC, and straighten out some information that is hit or miss. So it is the classes we're offering out here, or UW is offering out here, which has been great, are part of a larger program. So it's a certificate program, and that's why you registered actually for the Capstone Certificate Program before you were able to enroll in the course. Obviously, some of you will probably plan to finish this and continue taking courses. For those of you who do want to do that, we will try to offer consistent courses each semester. The plan is to offer one each semester. It may not always be that it is one you need, but that would tend to happen in the summers probably, when we're still looking to see if we'll be able to offer the 500 levels. Other than that, though, you're also welcome to take the courses more one-off or sporadically. And regardless of your status in the program, you still do have to go through an internal approval process each semester. So before registering, you do need to let us know that you're interested in the courses, and we've done that through Guru Post thus far, just telling you what the next course will be, and to let us know if you're interested in doing that. So please continue to keep a lookout for that. We do plan on making a wiki and having it more easily accessible so that you can fill out that info path and let us know in advance, and also see what courses are down the pipeline. But at this point, that largely depends on sort of approval internally, several kind of factors, as well as UW computer science staffing abilities. So we've been lucky enough to get some great professors out here so far. Hopefully that'll continue. Next semester as well. But we'll just kind of play that by ear as we keep going. The other thing I wanted to mention is that as far as tuition reimbursement goes, you do have to, even though you're pre-approved for the classes, and when we let you know to register, you've already been approved, you do still have to follow the tuition reimbursement guidelines, which includes filling out that form that most of you should know about. But I always get questions about that, so just want to make that clear. You just fill that out, your TL signs it, and you pass it along. And then at the end of the semester, assuming you score well, BC or better, you set up a quick meeting and you get reimbursed. Okay, so if you have any questions about that, feel free to direct them to me or Sarah Carroll. She'd be happy to answer those as well. Other than that, I know a lot of you are familiar with the ASE program. That's Application Support Engineer. And Jamie Bjorklund actually runs that. She was not able to make it today because she had a kid in daycare, but she will be here next week to just give you a little bit more information about the program. If any of you are interested that haven't talked to her, it is sort of a separate thing from the certificate program, so you do want to officially let her know that you're interested and get involved in that process, and she has some more sort of written information about it as well that we'll bring next week, so you can go over that. Let's see. The only other thing I wanted to mention is that we are looking at getting an official name for this program out here. So we've had some good ideas thus far, but if anybody actually thinks of a good idea for taking computer science courses at EPIC, much like we have Shark Week, or Professional Development Fund, or names for certain things, we also want a name for this program, just shoot those my way. We're going to look to pick a name in the next week. It'd be kind of cool if somebody actually taking the course came up with a name, so feel free to send those my way. And now I will introduce you to Jonathan, who is the program coordinator at UW and has been working on that end to answer a lot of your questions and just make sure everything goes smoothly.
Hey, everyone. Good evening. I just wanted to stop by and introduce myself. My name is Jonathan Henkel. I'm the Professional Programs Coordinator. I've chatted with a lot of you through this enrollment process and the application and admissions process, so thanks for bearing with us. A lot of red tape and logistics and getting all things sorted out. So we're just really pleased to have a full class here with 80 enrolled students. My thanks to Professor Fisher for coming out and doing this. If you guys ever have any questions or need anything on the UW program end, you can certainly shoot me an email. The Capstone Certificate Program, which is the program that majority of you are enrolled in, has a website now live too. So if you search the Capstone Certificate Program at UW, you can find a bunch of information on there as well. So I don't want to bleed into any of Professor Fisher's time. Thank you. Good luck with this term. And super humbled and impressed by your willingness to come out here late at the end of a very long work day just to do some more learning. So good luck and congratulations. And thank you all.
Am I on? Oop. Am I on? Sounds like I am. Cool. Let me ditto the fact that I'm very pleased to see so many interested faces after what must be a long, hard day. It's going to be a different situation for me. I have, in fact, taught this class before. So, in fact, one of the people I've taught it to is a member of our Board of Visitors. Now, Board of Visitors is something you've probably not heard about, but it's a program that the university has that after you make your first billion, we stop by and they stop by and say, wouldn't you like to give a little bit back? So at least one former student has done well indeed, and you're clearly all doing very well too. The format this time is a little different than what I'm used to teaching. Usually at the university, we do either 3 50-minute lectures a week or 2 hour-and-a-quarter lectures. But of course, we're squishing it all into one humongous lecture. So I'm not sure if my voice or your Sitzfleisch will settle it. By the way, what's Sitzfleisch? Sitz is sitting. What is Fleisch? Meat or flesh. So Sitzfleisch is the part that really is most endangered when you go through a long lecture. So what I'm going to try, I'm going to adapt to this, is I'm going to try an hour lecture, 15-minute break, another hour, 15-minute break, and a half hour, which comes to 2.5 hours, which is the requisite amount of time. Now, you're all adults, and I'll be explaining some differences in the class, to your benefit, I should say, as we kind of overview the class. But of course, if it's the case that you have to leave early, or your cell phone is buzzing, 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 and somebody at home wants you immediately, or whatever, you know, feel free to come and go as you need to. We don't take attendance. One person asked me if he had to bring his ID card, and I was more worried that I have to bring my ID card so some burly guards wouldn't grab me and kick me off as one of these terrible transients that keeps coming around your cafeteria, drawn by the scent of free food, or I guess it's not free, but very well-priced food. So at any rate, we'll try that. And first thing I want to call your attention to, we have 2 projections up here. One will be the class notes. The other will be an overhead. As you probably know from your days of taking other classes, profs have to have a piece of chalk in their hand and be marking on a board, or they're tongue-tied. And there's no real chalkboard here, so what I'm going to be using is the projector instead. And in a way, that's actually better, because as I make some notes, I'll be writing them on paper, and what I'm able to do is have them scanned and added to the online repertoire of what's available. I also realize that you have duties other than just this class. Whenever I teach a class on campus, I always assume, like all profs do, that my class is the only one that counts. What, you slept or you went to another lecture when you could have been working for me? No, that's bad. But I understand you have full-time jobs and they have necessities. And again, I'll show you some changes I've made to accommodate that. Now, I heard earlier that you were trying to come up with a good name for this series of classes. One of my goals here is to find out what the internal name is for those little trips that you're forced to take to Pioneer Software. I've heard some good names for it, but there must be some really good names that the outside world doesn't hear about. But I realize that you might be called aside and saying, you're doing a trip in the middle of winter to Boise, Idaho, which is something everybody looks forward to immensely. And I don't know, do you ever take trips to places like South Beach or Honolulu or the Riviera or something like that? Not yet. You got to be a little more senior for that. So anyway, let me first call your attention to the very first item, which is the URL for the class website. In fact, one thing before I get to that, you all should be enrolled in Piazza. And have any of you, most of you, all of you gotten messages from Piazza saying, yeah, you have. Okay, now what I did last Thursday is send out an initial message to everybody, but I don't think it went out. Did anybody get a message from me via Piazza on Thursday? I thought it was all set, and last night, I added somebody who registered at the last moment, and my list of messages did not include that one. So I'm not sure why that is, but we're going to get that straight, because Piazza is a very valuable tool, and it's something we'll use quite regularly. So if you haven't already visited this URL, you should, and write it down, and I'll be taking you on a little trip through that fairly shortly. You know when the class is. So I'm figuring about 3 hours. If you're trying to guess when you'll be out of here, with the 2.5 hours of lecture plus a couple of breaks to do pit stops or to let me rest up, save my voice or whatever, or you just to get up and stretch, 3 hours is a good estimate. You clearly know where it is, and that's amazing. Another thing I need to figure out here is how this big an organization can get by without numbers on the rooms or on the buildings. You know, the situation that for as long as I lived, you know, I'm on 5397. You can find me easily, but I'm told that nobody's there. It's like the old system of that. You find John the Potter, and he's two doors down right across from the guy who has the pigsty and things of that sort. Of course, you have much better decorations than that. But I'm going to figure out how to find my way around here in such a novel situation. So at any rate, I have my office number on there, and it's totally useless. I'll be holding office hours on site, which is easier for you and probably makes more sense. So I have a telephone number, but that's probably useless too, because that's the general phone number for the office. You can leave a message, but I'll probably not be at it. If you're real, real good, you may get my cell phone number, but only a few people get that. That's very private. Email works fine. I've been at the university long enough that it's very easy. My last name is my login. It's not like Jones73 or something like that. The office hours initially will be 5 to 7. I've been told that the powers that be want it scheduled in such a way that we don't really interfere with your work hours. So 5 is probably close enough to quitting time that if you want to come by and visit, you can do so. You can also send me email. You can also use Piazza, and I'll talk more about that in just a moment. So it's on Mondays and Thursdays in the Dune Room, which is just down the hall. And if you can find this room, you can find that. Depending on how much business I have 80 students. That's more than I typically have. I may increase the office hours. If I don't do much business, I may decrease them. I may also add extra days. Monday is there because our projects will always, when possible, be due on Tuesday, lecture day, and that'll give you a chance when a due date is coming up to come up and say, well, I haven't really worked on it. Can I do it in 24 hours? And we'll find out. And Thursday gives you a chance to digest some of the material from the lecture. I'm told Friday is not so good because typically on Fridays, people are sent out on their little trips to wherever to visit with customers. And again, I'm going to find out what the name of that trip really is. And so Thursday, to give you a chance to digest the lecture and perhaps come up with questions. Our TA is gentleman here, and is Menghua Wang, is that? Menghui. So I was telling him on the way over that not enough Americans are learning Chinese. Plenty of Chinese are learning English. So here's his email address. Again, the telephone would be virtually useless. Because he does not have an auto, he may not be having office hours on site. But what we'll do is when we have a graded assignment, and the assignments, as we'll find out, are done every 3 weeks. We have one right today, so we hate to waste time and energy. He'll come out after things graded with me on one of my lectures. We'll make an announcement that the grades are available, give you the distribution. He'll tell you what common errors were, what he tested for, etc. And then you'll have an opportunity to pull him aside and ask specific questions if you think there was something problematic about the grading. So he'll grade the projects, I'll grade the exams. And I think that's a fair division of labor. Here are some dates, and again, I've done some adjustment. These may be subject to minor change, but you should probably copy these down. These are also on the web page, as I'll show you in the web page. So our first assignment is due 3 weeks from today. So one of the very favorite things to do when I have a new class is hand out an assignment. And again, if you have a weak heart or something, please. What did we figure out? There were 16 times 5 is 80, right? So there's 16 per group. Here. Why don't we just start them on one end and the other and you keep them around. Some of you may have printed it out. If so, that's great. I think I have enough, but they kept running the count up on me. and I'll be talking about the assignment in detail in just a bit. Typically, I give it out on day one and then talk about it in some detail after you've had a chance to read the assignment on day two. But that won't work out because of our compressed schedule. So we'll talk in more detail about this. First thing you'll notice is it's, my gosh, 8 pages. Oh, my gosh, what's that guy asking me to do? But you'll find out, in a way, detailed assignments are better than the amorphous ones. I remember when I was in college, way back when, that the assignments I really hated were something like, discuss in 5,000-word essay how the price of anchovies accelerated the fall of the Roman Empire. And remember, this is before Google. I mean, Google's not so bad. You can Google just about anything and find a hit. But those are the assignments I really hated because they were so amorphous, you had no idea how to head. So I'll be going through this, and I'm certainly you'll read it in detail. But the fact that it's 8 pages is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. And in a lot of cases, I've given you some exact details about how code is going to be organized, etc. And one of the things I'll be doing today is actually bringing up Eclipse. I take it most of you used Eclipse last summer when you were taking the data structures course. We have a couple of people here who are not Epic employees. Don't stone them yet. They're part of a professional master's program. There's one gentleman there. Is there another person here who's a professional master's? Right. Okay, so you two, I can get you a login to the wireless account so you can be able to do that. And if you already don't have it, you should get yourself a copy of Eclipse. It's not absolutely necessary. There's another alternative, which is the old edit compile test routine, and I'll talk about that. If you're doing that, you'll need to have, let me slide this over. If you're not, Eclipse is what's recommended, but you can also use Java C. That's the Java compiler. Java, which is the runtime system, the thing that makes .class files run and produce output, and a build utility called Ant. You may or may not be familiar with that. One of the nice things about Ant is it's built into Eclipse. What a build utility is essentially a little sub-definition that says when you want to build a program, here's the order in which things should be done. It's not immediately obvious that's important, but it turns out in this case it is, in our case, because we won't be doing just Java. We'll be using a couple of cool tools that write Java for us. That's really kind of the goal of most people who are programming. They imagine that in programming, you just go to, I have an old iPhone. What's the name of Siri, the person you talk to on iPhones? And you say, Siri, how do I make $1 million? This is in the old days when $1 million was a lot of money. And Siri grinds, and comes back and says, well, first you buy a lot of paper and bottles of green ink, and on and on and on. So a situation, we thought we could have tools automate all the hard work, and making $1 million is still not fully automated yet. But it turns out part of our project will be. And that's a very cool thing because some of the more detailed and error-prone issues in writing compilers are done automatically. Mistakes are certainly still possible, but we want to use those tools. And the goal is to increase the availability and the potency of those tools. So you'll be able to use those tools to do your project. And this is very much like if you've written in other programming languages. If you did C, you might use GCC, the GNU C compiler. And then you'd just execute a program. The famous build utility in Unix, if you've ever taken other classes, is something called make. Now, I see you use System 7. Does System 7 have a build utility? I don't use System 7 very much. I use it a little, but not very much. Anyway, we'll talk more about that, and that's a useful thing. So 3 weeks from today, the first assignment is due. I'll talk about the fact that we do have a policy where we can slip that a little bit, and I'll explain that. 3 weeks later, we have essentially 15 weeks, so assignments, 5 of them, are 3 weeks apart. March 3rd will be another. March 24th, another. We'll have a midterm exam, but since there's so many of you and you're always coming and going, what I've decided to do is give 2 sittings of a midterm. They won't necessarily be the same exam, so you're not necessarily going to be smart to take the second exam and ask your buddy what I asked on the first. But you won't do both of them, either on the 8th or the 15th. And by the way, there's a minor typo. On the 15th, that should be 5:30. I just didn't edit properly, just so that you have time. Typically, the exam takes about 2 hours. So one or the other of those you'll take. Similarly, jumping ahead, there'll be two sittings of the final exam, one fairly early and one later. Take whichever you want. You don't have to ask permission. You don't even have to tell me in advance. You're not allowed to take two and take the better grade of the two, but other than that, whichever one fits in. So if you have plans or, again, you're sent off to Boise, Idaho to enjoy the local ambiance, be able to do one or the other of those. And assignment five is a little bit later than the others. The last one is always seems to be the most difficult. And it turns out that's the last week of classes at the university, so I've stretched it a little bit. That way, our grader gets a chance to be able to be grading the final project step while I'm grading final exam one or two, depending on which you take. So that's essentially our schedule, and I think I'll try to stick to that. Classroom textbook, whoa, got to show that. The title is Crafting a Compiler. I personally know all three authors, and at least two of them, I can tell you they're grand fellows, they're gentlemen, scholars, and the best of people. The third guy, I'm not at all sure of. I'd have to let somebody else decide on that. But there will be some readings from the textbook, and essentially we'll get through a lot of the chapters. And again, if you want background and more detail, I have lecture notes, and that's the key material, but the textbook, of course, has more material, references, bibliographies, etc. In fact, the first reading assignment will be chapters 1 and 2 of the book. Don't have to read them immediately, but you should do it soon just to get some background. And the lecture notes, the things I'm currently projecting. I see at least some of you were smart about that. But essentially, we have a version of the class notes available from the webpage that's printed 4 per page. And this is a great way to get an expectation of what I'm going to be talking about. And this way, you won't have to copy down a huge amount of detail when I get around to detailed code or algorithms. Just print it out and maybe make comments on the side, or if a question comes up, what the answer was, etc. So it's a lot easier for you. If, unfortunately, you have to miss a lecture, which means really 3 lectures or a week's worth of work, this is a good way to catch up. And again, it's not as good as hearing my golden tones, but sometimes you have to do what you have to do. So that's available. I'll be taking you through the webpage shortly and showing you some of that. Piazza is what you all should have been contacted by. If you registered late, you may not. At one of our breaks or at the end of the whole lecture today, if you haven't been contacted by Piazza, give me your email. I'll add you manually. And then Piazza should send and say, hey, I believe you're a member of CS536. Would you like to participate? I strongly recommend that you do. If you haven't used Piazza before, it's essentially a chat room for a class. The big advantage of it is if you're working on a project and something comes up, feel free to ask questions. This is a very open group. We want people to help each other. In fact, you'll be able to have a partner in programming if you care to. But if you have a question, certainly you can't ask, hey, I had a rough weekend, my project's due, give me your solution. That obviously is not acceptable. But if you say, oh, gee, this crazy system is giving me this message and it doesn't make the least bit of sense, what's going on? Send out the message. Maybe I'll see it. Maybe the TA will see it. Maybe some of you will see it. If you have good confidence that you know the answer, maybe you've tripped across it and figured out what was going on, please feel free to answer and say, here's what's going on, here's why. And this may come up back almost immediately. So it's a big plus. And it gives us a history of questions people are asked. So maybe you were wondering about this and say, I didn't understand this, but now this person asked a clarifying question. And having done so, now it's clearer what he's asking for. And there could be a lot of that. So you should have had the email to get you involved. I'll probably send out a message fairly soon just to make sure that you all get it. Of course, I won't know that you all get it except if I ask and nobody says, oh, it got missed again. But I think that was just a setup problem, and I think we should be able to get the messages going out properly. What may have happened is it had an official start date, and I sent my message before I set the official start date. That may have been a boo-boo. A Piazza can be nasty occasionally. Academic misconduct, don't worry much about that. This is more for undergraduates. You're all adults, and I expect you to act like adults, and I'll give you the opportunity to be adults. But I teach at the university, and students can be notorious grade grabbers. Just this past semester, I gave an exam, and a person answered a question, and so I gave him half credit. But it turned out the problem was worth 13 points. So what's half of 13? 6.5. And I gave him 6 because I didn't really love the answer that much. He actually came to an office hour and said, I should have made it 7 because I should have rounded up instead of down. So here's a guy grade grubbing me for 1 point. Apparently nobody ever told this fellow, you have only one chance to make a bad first impression. And that fellow certainly did. So I don't expect any of that nonsense. If we make a big mistake, fine. But if on an exam I decide it's worth 7 points, you think really it's more like 8 or 9, why bother? It's not going to make that big a difference unless I make errors consistently, and that's not too likely to happen. In fact, as often as not, although you won't admit it, it'd be the case to say, hey, he gave me half credit on that. I was just, you know, you can use whatever phrase you want, just spewing it out and seeing if he would buy it, and that sucker fell for it. People never tell me about that. They said, oh my gosh, you were generous. I would never have given myself anything for that lousy answer. So it evens out in that way. So don't worry too much about this. This is more for undergraduates. Homework and program projects. This again, will be an issue. We have a due date. We'll accept up to 1 week after that. After that, the reason I won't accept anymore is that we'll be going over answers. And in fact, something I'll do for you that I don't normally do for other students is, if you want, I'll give you a solution. I normally don't do that because if I give a solution this semester, gosh help me if a year from now I'm teaching again and I want to use a project that's similar to the current one. I know that if there's solutions floating around out there, they're going to end up with somebody or some frat or sorority sister or frat mate or sorority sister or whatever. But I'll send it out if you want it and you just want to see what I was thinking to ask for one. The only thing I'll ask is please keep it confidential. Please don't post it online. If other people want a solution, they can ask me for it. And that way, I'll treat you more likely to act as adults. There's a late penalty of 3 points a day just to make sure that the final accept date does not become the default due date. But here's again where you get an advantage. If you have a good excuse for handing in late, I'll take your word for it. Just write it down and simply say, I tried, but I couldn't make it. They sent me to Boise, or one of my children had the flu and I had to do that right there, or I just looked and we had ice damming. That's one of the things they don't tell you when you're not from Wisconsin, what ice damming is. And it's not just damming all the ice that's out there. So ice damming, and where my roof is started to leak, I had to do something about it. So any of that, what you do is hand it in late and just put a note for the TA saying, I had justified reasons for handing in late. Late points are not appropriate. If they are, just admit to it. So that way, the due dates mean something, and the minor penalty is there just to kind of remind you, better get it done, better get it done. The reason for that is, as we'll get to it, is that we're going to build 5 different components in the 5 projects and put them all together. You're going to have a working compiler for a language that's a reasonable subset of Java. Java's a pretty important language, and the subset you'll have, it'll have methods, it'll have expressions, it'll have I/O, it'll have loops, it'll have conditionals, have arrays, much, not quite all, but much of what's available in real programming languages, and you'll write a compiler that works. And in fact, it'll actually generate .class files just like Java does, so your programs through your compiler can run just like any other Java program can. That means if you, as extra credit, wanted to add brand new features, you could go ahead and do it. And people sometimes do that. It turns out many of you think, my gosh, there's something that's lacking in programming languages. In fact, I'll show you an example of one here, is that you all know about arrays. And arrays can be indexed normally by integers. In some languages, you can actually index an array by a literal or enumeration. So I can say a color is red, blue, green, and index by red, blue, green. But one of the odd things you can't do is index by, let's call them floating point numbers at first, although that's really not quite what you want, numbers with a decimal point in it. And for the sort of stuff you do, that might make sense. I might be able to say something like temp. This is not temporary, a temperature of 98.6. Most languages don't allow you to do that. But it might be a cool thing to have. If you're doing a medical program, you might want to have some information and saying if the person's thermometer comes out, what's 98.6? Let's see how many budding MDs we have here. That's the perfectly normal temperature, except not all people actually are at 98.6 when they're normal. But it goes up, and I guess, what is it, 102 or 103 is really serious, and a little bit beyond that, you better be hospitalized immediately. But it'd be a cool thing if you could just go ahead and read a number, and unfortunately, temperatures are done in fractions, and have a little table that says, here's what to do if the temperature is this or that or the other thing. So that's something you might want to add in. We'll talk from time to time about why that's not in there. And the reason that's not in there is not because of 98.6. That's a perfectly reasonable thing. But it'd be something like temp of 100 divided by 3, which is also a floating point number. And what's the trouble about 100 dividing by 3? It's 33 and what? 0.33333333 and go on and on and on. And in some systems, 98.3 and 98.333333 are not the same. So you get into this problem that floating point numbers are not good because they have this little fuzz. They go off into infinity, and that can cause problems. But people have worked on that, and we'll perhaps talk about some cases where you can have fractions and not get into this problem of long decimal sequences that are problematic. So that's one of the nice things about doing your own language is you control it. You can add things, you can change things, and in a lot of cases, that's really important. We, as computer professionals, are really the people that control the system. We don't always realize that, but it's true. A great example is whether you like Obamacare or not. I know this is a medical thing, and you shouldn't talk about that. One of the things that I think everybody who's a computer professional agrees on is that we, as professionals, were disrespected when the website came out. The professionals just thought, oh, these guys are just viable. We'll throw them a couple of $100 million and say, build it like this, and they'll just go and do it, just like building a doghouse or digging a swimming pool or whatever. You folks do quality software, and you know how hard quality software is. And one of the things that really irritates me is when people don't realize how hard good software is. So that's something where we're starting to learn on that, and one of the things we want to have is the ability to understand how software works. One of my goals is that you understand what programs do. Not necessarily why they do them. That's always another issue. But essentially how a program operates. And that's something we'll be getting to. For people who are worrying about how things go, again, this is more for undergraduates than you, is that here's essentially the fractional weights I'll put on there. Exams will have a value because exams will check for things that programming don't. But programming and building your system is the most important aspect. And it's never, ever been the case that someone who got a working compiler at the end of my semester ever got a failing grade, never even got near a failing grade, because you built a compiler. How can it be failing? One of the cool things about software is it doesn't know about young or old, tall or short, white, black, green, orange. It knows that if you do something right, it'll work. And if you do it wrong, even if you're a big shot in Washington, you say, it shall be. And you do it wrong, it shall not be. So that's a situation where we'll build software, and in most cases, people get the software to work. And it's a cool thing to say at the end of the semester, I know how a program, it could be in Java, our language is called CSX, but it could be in other languages too. They're all a lot very similar when it comes to translation. Here's the steps that go on, and here's what a program is like when it's run by a computer, and here's how the computer runs a program. So I think that's very important and something we'll be getting to. So in case you had interest on that, there you are. Partnerships. I assume that there's very much a team approach here. I see people always huddling, and that's good. For our first assignment, I'm going to ask that you do that individually. That's just because some of you may be rusty in using Eclipse or rusty in programming Java, and I have to rub your nose in a little bit. But after that, for the four remaining projects, you're welcome to have a partner. I won't assign them. I can put a Lonely Hearts Club up if you like, or you know somebody, or you can have a friend or a colleague or someone. Work with them by all means. It's not considered cheating. You can do part, and the other person can do part. You can ask questions, copy code, whatever. And I think that's the better way of actually developing programs, and I don't have a problem with it. So that's the way it'll go, and what'll happen is if you do a partnership project, please just hand in one solution and just put a note saying, I'm a partner with so-and-so, so our poor TA here doesn't do two grades at the same program. He'll be very unhappy if that turns out that he had to grade the same program twice. Once is more than enough, and twice is beyond the pale. So let me go ahead and... Come on, guy. What I wanted to do is go and find the website. And walk you through that a little bit. That's the thing, the URL I talked about a bit ago. So there's me again, and there's a link so you can send email to me, or you can visit my webpage if you want. It's not terribly interesting. There's a way to email the TA. Details about crafting the compilers. I know you can't wait to buy a copy of it. Or maybe, do they have a library here? I mean, if they had a library where you could order several copies, that'd be great. I don't know if that's done, but some places have technical libraries, and that'd be cool. Course information, the course overview, I've told you about that. I don't think we need to do that. Key dates, grades. Actually, what will happen here is that, for the most part, you'll get your grades individually. The final course grade is now done by having you log into, I think it's MyUW, and look up the course. I'll send out an announcement to Piazza that final grades are out. But other grade information, particularly the final exam and the last project step, because those are graded essentially when classes are over. I'll put up a listing of what the grades were using your student ID number or part of your student ID number for privacy's sake. So that will be available at that time. Misconduct, none of you are going to do misconduct, so no problem there. Readings, that's the business there. I'll add to that. Oops, come on, guy. Programming assignments. Ah, yeah. So that's something I did want to get to. So eventually we'll have five programming assignments that I'll add to them, and they'll all be out there well before the end of the semester. So what happens here is the program requirements is the paper I just handed out. And by the way, did everybody get a copy, or did I have enough? Cool. No, I didn't. Sorry about that. Oh, there's the, oh yeah, good. So they just didn't quite make it, okay. Anybody else who missed one? Should have checked on that. You got to share with your classmates. That's what I learned in kindergarten. So essentially, that's the requirements. One of the things we'll be doing in this class, unlike a lot of the earlier computer science classes you might be taking, is we're not going to ask you to program from scratch. I don't think that's very realistic. In most environments, you start with a project that's partially designed. There are people called software architects who get the big picture down, and you're assigned to do this component or that. What we'll do in this particular case is give you, in this situation, I'm actually giving you a solution to a problem related to what you're going to do. And I'll talk about that in more detail in a bit. To get you started, I have to give you code, and there's two versions of doing it. One is, if you use Eclipse, you can take an entire project and compress it together into a zip file and download it. And I'll show you about that in a minute. So what you would do is, if you have your own Eclipse system, you would click on this guy, get a single file, and that would be in compressed format. And then you would import it through Eclipse, and it'll automatically decompress, and then you'll be able to start using it. I'll show you that in a bit. If you're an old-fashioned sort of guy and you don't want to use Eclipse and you just want to use code, here's essentially what's in the archive file. There's essentially some source, there's a build file, there's some test files, et cetera. And that would be enough if you're going to be using the Java C, Java Ant approach. It's up to you, whichever you use. I kind of prefer Eclipse, except Eclipse can be a son of a gun sometimes. And occasionally I'll just say, heck with it, and go down to the console level and do it that way. In fact, I got myself a brand new MacBook Air, and it's a beautiful system, except for some reason Ant is not included in the underlying Unix system anymore. My old system, Ant, was available. Now I have to find it and load it and get it all linked up and all that, and that's unfortunate. So one of my slide problems there. So we also have examinations. I won't And he'll have information about the examinations. If we're assigned a room other than this one, I'll have that in there. And I have copies of some old exams if you want to give a flavor of what the exams are like. So those will be there, and they won't be exactly the same questions, but they'll have enough of a flavor that if you've seen the old exams and you see the exam I offer, it won't be too different. Various handouts. In this session, I've got to change that. This is the old handouts. So here are some of the things that we'll have. We'll have the various assignments. There'll be a homework. And there'll be some notes towards the end of the semester about doing code generation. And I'll update those as necessary, but that'll be there. This is actually more than we need right now, but okay, that's fine. Nothing all that secret. Lecture notes. That's essentially what I was showing you a moment ago. What we'll have them is lecture by lecture with the date, and I'll also have a composite file that has all the notes throughout the semester, and you can do that for searching. Say if you're doing an exam preparation, you say, he's going to ask me something about JLEX, and I will. Then you can search JLEX and find the section on JLEX and review it. So that'll be available, and that I think is useful. And some useful programming tools. And this is just background stuff, various Java classes, stuff on Ant, Eclipse, et cetera, et cetera. If you want to say, I want to know something about something or other, this is a good first place to check. It may be what you need, or it may not, but at least that's a good place to check. So I think that's all I wanted to show about the web page. Any questions on what I've gone over? This is essentially class organization. It's not material yet. Okay, I think the next thing I want to do then is you all have the assignment. So let me start talking about, let's see how close we are to our, come on, guy. Cool, got some time. Here. So now I'll call your attention to the other panel, panel with the handwritten notes. Hopefully my handwriting isn't that bad. So what is it I'm asking you to do, and why am I asking you to do it? The why is the easier part. I need you to get used to some of the compiler terminology and get used to doing Java and Eclipse again. It turns out that it might make sense to do the very first component of the compiler, but that's a scanner. And nobody knows yet what a scanner is, and scanner needs some specialized terminology. Haven't had a chance to give you that yet. So I'm going to work on something that you already probably do know, and that is something called a tree walk. That's probably something when you took data structures, you did a tree walk. A tree walk says there's a data structure called a tree. And by the way, if you looked at the middle of this assignment, starting at page 3 and on to page 4, there's a definition there precisely of the various nodes that you're going to have and what they represent and how they're interconnected. And I'll show you that. So essentially, you're going to do a tree walk, and I'm giving you a solution in the little archive I showed you a moment ago that does essentially the tree walk. So what you're going to end up doing is something that sounds a little strange, but actually is terribly useful and actually appears inside of Eclipse. And what that is an identifier cross-reference. So you've all seen books and documents that have a cross-reference in the back. It says, alphabetically usually, it says, you want to find out something about Wiebel-Fitzers. Well, Wiebel-Fitzer is defined on page such and such and mentioned on this, that, and the other page. So if you need to know about Wiebel-Fitzers, that's a way to go. But programs ought to have the same thing. Because programs, like technical terms, have identifiers. Those are the words or the names people use. And typically they have one definition and a number of uses. The definition gives you the properties. Is this an array? Is it a class name? Is it a scalar? And what's its type? Is it Boolean? Is it integer? Is it some class that I've just defined? And where are all the places that it's used? So what we're going to do is create a data structure that encodes that information. And why would we want to do that? Well, first of all, let me show you what it's going to do. Here's an example right in the middle of a little baby programming language we're going to use. It's called CSS Lite. Just like we have Miller Lite for people who can't take the real Miller, we'll have CSS Lite for people who can't take the real CSX. And CSX is like a baby Java. So this thing looks kind of like a Java program. It doesn't have a class name on it because there's only one class in the simple language. But what it has is definitions that look a lot like Java and expressions that use those definitions. So in this simple program, I have an integer A and a Boolean B, and then some statements. You've probably seen if statements. They typically are controlled by a Boolean. And I have an expression. In this case, A gets A plus 1. So what this cross-reference would do is analyze this and produce what's at the bottom. Actually, what you're going to produce is a data structure that contains this information, and what I'm showing you here is a visualization. Turns out Java has a very nice way of letting you visualize data structures. Each data structure implemented as a class can have a particular method called toString. It takes no parameters and returns a string, and it's a visualization of what's in that data structure. If you're not used to doing that, a good hint in programming Java is have all your data structures have a toString method. Why? Well, you're either going to go wrong or need to be tested. And how do you know if they're right or wrong if you don't know what's in them? And a toString will show you. So this thing is really the visualization of a cross-reference. What is it? Well, each definition is on a line. Where do we get the line from? Turns out our buddy, the scanner and parser, will give that to you. In the assignment, there's a detailed thing of how to get the line number. So it says, oh, hey, Mr. Tree Node, what line were you defined on? It'll tell you. And by the way, it's guaranteed to be correct. We're giving you the scanner and parser. If they screw up, that's our problem, not yours. You can reduce my grade, but I won't reduce yours. It says, what was the name of the thing? In this case, it's just A or B. In parentheses, they give you the information. In our simple language, you just have a couple of types, like integer and Boolean. And after it, very much like what you see in the back of a book, is a list of all the places where that identifier was used. The little parenthesis, too, by the way, is just a neat way of saying it was used twice. If you want in your solution, you can simply repeat a number if you want. But this is simply saying A was used on line 4 twice. And you look at it, yes, indeed it was. And B, a Boolean, was used on line 3. So you say, okay, that's nice. But why would I ever want that? Well, it turns out there's a process given a very fancy name in Java and in Eclipse called refactoring. Refactoring is one of these names because you've never heard it before. But what refactoring does is allow you to systematically change a definition and all the uses in one operation. Now, why would you want to do that? I'll tell you one reason I do. Back when I was in high school, which is a long time ago, they had classes, essentially classes to learn a skill. For the boys, it was wood shop and metal shop. So guess what? I learned how to cut wood. I do that all the time. Or how to weld metal. Do that all the time. All the women, girls, ladies took a different set of classes. They took secretarial skills where they learned to type. And, of course, I never type and you never type. So I do my hunt and peck type typing. They also took, like, home economics. So they learned to cook and clean. And, of course, I never eat and I never expect to have a clean house. So that was totally useless. Of course, back then, and maybe when you were in school, a boy taking girls' classes or women's classes would have been dead meat. So it wasn't a thinkable thing, but it's one of those regrets I have that I never learned to type. So what do I do because I can't type? Well, class instructors have told you variables ought to have very good names. You don't call something A or B. I'm just being lazy. You think of it cost of one dozen or maximum rate to date. But typing all those things, maximum rate to date, I'm going to go crazy doing that. So what do? I type it in as a one or two word thing and do refactoring. I say, I called it AA, that's a terrible name. Let's refactor all the use of AA to maximum rate to date. And I only have to type the darn thing once and whoosh, the definition and all the uses get updated. So it's really a cool thing if you're a bad typist. And it's actually more powerful than that. You can do things like add or remove parameters to a method call. So you have a method and say, hey, I was a fool. I should have added an extra parameter. But now I got to go back and change all these. You can actually automate it so that the definition and the calls are all updated simultaneously and it all is correct as far as the compiler is concerned. So it's a cool thing. And It's something that a real system really would want to do. So I'm not wasting your time. I'm giving you something that has a value. And there it is. Refactoring is used for debugging, for example. Oops, get that down there. And again, what you're going to be learning from this is learning your updating your compiler skills. And we're going to actually introduce some terminology. And at this stage, you're not going to have to actually implement any of it except block structured symbol tables, which I'll talk about later. There'll be a scanner and a parser. What are those? I'll tell you shortly. And we still have hours to do it, so I will. An abstract syntax tree. That's actually the data structure you'll be working from that's built by the scanner and parser. We give that to you. And again, the block structured symbol table. Put that all together, and you'll be able to do this cross-index generation. Well, what's this programming language as I showed you about called CSX Lite? Let's talk a little bit about it. My definition right now is going to be kind of informal, but one of the great things about compiler definitions is I'll soon give you a way to say very precisely what the components of a valid program look like. No doubts about it. You're going to say, does a semicolon go there? I'll be able to tell you. Does a parenthesis go there? I'll be able to tell you. We have to get that definitional mechanism down. We're not there yet. So at this stage, we'll just kind of show you examples. It's not the best way, but we'll get you started. So what's a program? It's limited by curly braces, just like Java, and it has declarations. That's where you say A is of this type, B is of that type, and statements that use those variables. What's a declaration? Well, declaration is either integer or bool. Clearly, a real language will have more types. This is just to get us started. And the name of the identifier. What's an identifier? I haven't shown you quite yet. Let's go down and find it. So an identifier is a letter like A or B or I or J, followed by additional letters or digits. Other languages allow something fancier like underscores and so on. We're not up to that yet. So an identifier might be just the letter A or XYZ or go team. I wrote that before the Packers game on Sunday. Sorry about that. Or CVN-76. Does anybody know what CVN-76 is? Excuse me? Aircraft carrier. And do you know which one? It's the you were in the service? Yeah, that's right. It's a nuclear carrier, and it's the Reagan. I obviously remember that one because 1776, the spirit of 76. So it's the USS Reagan. But it's a valid identifier also, and certainly a lot of people are interested where those guys are. In our language, case is ignored. This is a longstanding debate, and you probably have your ideas. Being an instructor, I can give you my call on it, but something you decide. Should case be significant or insignificant in a program? What that means is if I write an identifier in uppercase and exactly the same letters in lowercase, should that be the same thing or something different? Languages break both ways. And we'll talk about it. In my language, it's going to be the case, oh, no, it's this situation. We'll have to bring this back. Well, we'll do this in a bit. This thing times out after a while. So in our language, case is insignificant, but that is variable. In your language, you should decide. The advantage is you can have two uses of the same name. For example, sometimes in Java or C, if you have something that's a constant value of something, you put it in uppercases. And an uppercase is a way of saying this is unchanged or unchangeable. You can have the same name in lowercase, and that is changeable. It's an idea. The problem I have with having case be significant is when you read a program, at least in English, the case does not come out. So if I say the dog was blue, it's not clear when I said it that the dog was lowercase, uppercase, or mixed case, whatever. And therefore, if you mentally kind of think of it as the dog was blue, which dog did I mean? The uppercase one or the lowercase one? So that is an issue. So in our language, case is ignored. What are statements? Oops. I tried to get this all full screen, but didn't quite fit. So we have an assignment statement. You've probably seen this. It's identifier equals expression. And someday in the future, I'll tell you, by the way, that form of an assignment is really done wrong. It's been around forever and it'll never be changed, but it's actually the wrong way to do an assignment. You say, whoa, gee, it's there, but I'll explain in future Sunday why. That's a teaser so you come back for future lectures. We also have a conditional that says if an expression is true, do the statement. We don't even have an else part. All realistic languages do, trying to keep it simple. And we have a block. A block is a local series of definitions and statements that typically form the body of a conditional or the body of a loop. And we want to have that in there so we can talk about scoping. We also have expressions. And expressions are identifiers. They're integer literals. Integer literal is sometimes called an integer constant. It's not like a named constant like pi, but it's rather a series of digits that represent itself. That's why it's called literal, like 0, 1, or 777. Oh. That was my time for a break, so let me get this thing down and we'll take a little break and then resume. We also have expressions that binary operators like plus, minus, star, equal, and not equal. Parentheses are allowed. Ooh, if I showed them to you. And comments of the double slash form are allowed. And I think that's a good place to take a break. So let's take a break for, how much would you like? 10 minutes? Does that sound about right? You can do a pit stop if you want. I'm going to get a little drink of soda. And so it's 6:27. So in about 6:35, we'll resume. And we'll continue talking about the project. Excuse me?
The notes on the website.
Right. It will be on the website.
Will be.
Right, because I sometimes change them as I go. I'll scan them when I get back and put them up in a day or so.
Okay.
In fact, maybe that'll be a good thing to send my first message to Piazza is that the extra notes are up. Yeah, what happened is I just created those this afternoon when I was thinking about, I was going to say a lot, but I didn't have a blackboard. So I said I better put them on paper there and make them available. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Did you sign up late?
I signed up today.
Okay. Yeah. That's exactly why. So why don't you just? Do I have a blank sheet of paper? I think I do.
Should we put our WISC email in there?
It's your preferred one. I don't think it checks.
Silly emails are okay.
Excuse me.
Silly emails are okay.
Anything you want.
As long as they're preferred.
Yeah. Situation. So. My recommendation is the one that most people send you email on so that if you get email, so why don't you, do we have a spot there? Yeah.
I have a pretty silly old one that I use a lot. First Gmail account
is only Gmail. Yeah.
It's weird.
Okay, and of course, no embedded blanks in the. No, I mentioned in passing that unlike most classes, I'll give you, if you ask for it, a solution. Absolutely, that's why. And the situation there, I prefer people use, let me turn this off, I don't know if we need to give the whole world our conversation.